will be reviewing the SEEP assessment of forage harvest management, natural resources conservation services conservation practice standard code 511. The team members for our group are myself, Jerry Cherney, who is at Cornell University. Jerry is has done a lot of work with grass and grass legume mixtures, and especially fertility management and manure management. Darren Redfern just joined the group from Oklahoma State University, will provide us with a little more expertise in the warm season grasses, native grasses. Scott Hengstrom, University of Nebraska, works with wildlife ecology. Okay, so the definition for this practice standard is that we should employ timely cutting and removal of forages from the field as hay, green chop, or silage. And the reasons that we're doing this, the purposes that we're attempting to accomplish by following that definition is that we should optimize yield and quality of forage at the desired levels, promote vigorous plant regrowth, maintain stand life, manage for desired species composition, use forage plant biomass as a soil nutrient uptake tool, control insects, diseases, and weeds, and maintain and or improve wildlife habitat. So this is a question. Can we use this definition, harvest and remove forage in a timely manner to accomplish these purposes, accomplish these goals? And those of you in the room are all experts in this area. I should mention that there are thousands of papers that deal with this, many of them generated by the people in this room. And in fact, there are over 50 papers dealing with harvest management effects on yield and quality, and some of these factors at this meeting this week. Okay, so we'll start out then with the first purpose, optimize yield and quality of forage at desired levels. So we need to consider the requirements of the livestock that will be consuming this forage before we plant the hay field and when we set up harvest management strategies. We have classes of livestock, such as lactating dairy cattle, that require very high levels of nutrition to obtain maximum production, and other classes of livestock, such as beef cows, that require much lower quality forage in order to achieve the production goals. And if we look within, even within the dairy cow group, lactating dairy cows in their early stages require much higher forage quality expressed as relative feed value than a heifer or even late lactation animals. So we should be planting species and managing species in such a way that we meet the requirements of these livestock. And what happens if we don't? What happens if we are producing forage that would be suitable for a very high demanding animal and using it for a lower class of animal? Well, we have nutrients that are potentially wasted. In the case of high quality alfalfa, high quality clovers, we sometimes will have excessive degradation of protein in the rumen. We would have loss of this ammonia then through the digestive system and excreted as urine, and we have a disposal problem at that point, as well as wasted nutrients. There's a group, Gabriel Michael et al., that has put forth this idea, this concept of precision feed management. And in this concept, we combine economic and environmental sustainability with feeding management. And this would allow us to, or this involves high forage and homegrown feed diets. So we're producing the forages on farm and recycling those nutrients on farm. Nutrient feeding then is for optimum production without overfeeding. And this is a concept that we've been working with for some time now. We're in Wisconsin, there has been concern with overfeeding of phosphorus in the dairy industry. There had been a philosophy of thinking that we should have adequate levels of phosphorus to improve reproductive performance of animals. So phosphorus is overfed. It's become an environmental disaster. And now we've backed off and on phosphorus feeding, and this is involved with this concept. So the goals then of this concept are to improve nutrient efficiency and economic returns, optimize purchased feed, nutrient imports, and crop production, and minimize nutrient overfeeding and excretion, a key point. So again, we should be matching the livestock requirements with the type of feed that we're producing for that animal. Okay. So, again, considering this purpose to optimize yield and quality of forage at desired levels, we have lots of data, lots of papers that demonstrate that forage quality declines as the crop matures. Jeff Brink was here before. I don't see him now, but Jeff has just come up with some new data on changes, daily changes in alfalfa relative feed value, NDF concentration, NDF digestibility for alfalfa. And there's older data, there's information on grasses, a lot of information that we cannot dispute that would happen. Forage yield increases as the crop matures. So within a given harvest period, as the plant matures, forage yield is increasing. Starch and sugars fluctuate diurnally. So here's an opportunity that we have in feeding systems that we can take advantage of this. Vance Owens has done some research on diurnal fluctuations in red clover and alfalfa and demonstrated that we do get better fermentation with afternoon harvested red clover and alfalfa for silage production. Slightly less proteolysis occurs in the silo. Research by Joe Burns and Dwight Fisher and Hank Mayland has demonstrated that in tall fescue, we have greater palatability of tall fescue hay that's harvested in the afternoon compared to the morning, and greater intake by beef animals. And some recent work in Canada and Quebec by Brito et al. Has demonstrated greater milk production from silage that was harvested in the afternoon compared to in the morning. So there is evidence here that we can just change the time of day that we would harvest the forage in order to optimize the yield and quality of forage. Cutting height effects on quality and yield, and this is some information that Jerry Cherney summarized. If we harvest, say, at a 4-inch height, if we would decide to harvest a little bit lower, we would gain that much NDF, we would lose that much forage quality, we would lose that much yield, and we would lose that much milk production. So we, as we harvest shorter, we lose a little quality. As we harvest taller, we gain a little quality. But by harvesting at a taller stubble height, we do lose some milk production. So this is another one of the criteria that is outlined in the forage harvest management code 511. Optimize yield and quality of forage at desired levels. Again, management tools to minimize field exposure, especially rain, should be used. And we've got an abundance of information. Mike Collins had done some work earlier, and there's more current information on this that quantifies the amount of quality lost with rainfall. So we do have tools, engineering tools, wide swaths that Dan Undersander has been exploring that will help us to get forage off of the field quickly and avoid rainfall losses. Moisture content at removal from the forage affects field and storage losses. So this is another consideration that there is an abundance of literature on that we must take advantage of when we attempt to optimize yield and quality of forage at desired levels. Dry forage, we've got field losses. Wet forage, we have storage losses. And length of cut affects silage packing and would tend to have more storage losses in the silo. This is another criteria that was listed in 511. There is abundant evidence to support use of length of cut as a criteria for accomplishing this purpose. Too wet silage can result in seepage, and this is an environmental concern. So we have losses of ammonia products from the silo when the silage is too wet. Another purpose, second purpose, is to promote vigorous plant regrowth and maintain stand life of desired species. Some species, as we all know, are sensitive to harvest timing. Some more sensitive, some less sensitive. And again, abundant literature to support this. We should, where appropriate, manage for reserves in roots and crowns. This isn't always necessary with some species. Stubble height and residual leaf area are more important than reserves in roots and crowns. Timely removal to minimize wheeled traffic is another important issue related to purpose number two. And Jensen in Nevada back in the 70s has demonstrated that removal of forage one day, the tractor traffic with removal of forage one day after harvesting results in a 8.2% loss in yield. 7-day delay in removing the forage, almost a 30% yield loss. Undersander has done additional work with his group in Iowa, Kentucky, Minnesota, New York, and Wisconsin, where removing the forage 2 days after harvest results in a 4.6% loss, 5-day delay, a 16.7% loss. So delaying removal of forage results in greater losses, and this is primarily associated with disruption with breaking off of the developing stems from the crowns of the alfalfa plants. Okay. Again, with purpose number two, late harvest, last harvest for legumes can affect persistence through carbohydrate reserves and through insulation. We have information, data, papers from very early on and currently that deal with this. We have newer varieties of alfalfa that maybe is removing some of the importance of this. That seems to be the case. This issue is greater in the north and less important in the south. An interaction that we have with nutrient losses from the fields is that fall growth of alfalfa is a source of phosphorus runoff in the spring. So if we make this decision to not harvest alfalfa in the autumn to capture snow, to improve insulation, then in the spring that residue that has fallen is a significant source of phosphorus runoff into the surface water the following spring. There's research in Minnesota and Wisconsin that demonstrates this. Last harvest for grasses has been less thoroughly studied, and an example is with orchard grass. There seems to be no relationship between autumn harvest and persistence. Use of forage as a biomass as a nutrient uptake tool. We're attempting to not overlap significantly with Wes on this. We do need to consider the nutrient requirements of plants, and we need to consider luxury consumption. We need to consider nutrient balances in plants and livestock requirements. Potassium is a particular problem for some classes of livestock. If we apply manure onto fields that would be fed to cattle in the late stages of pregnancy, we can have high levels of potassium accumulate in the alfalfa plant or in grasses, and this can be an issue with milk fever. So these are issues to consider. Pathogens, another issue. We've got Yoni's disease that can be moved from manure onto the field, and if it's not applied, if the manure is not applied just after cutting, if some of the manure is accumulated on the vegetation, we can move Yoni's disease from farm to farm, or we can move it from animal to animal within a herd. We have pathogens that can affect milk quality. Listeria, Salmonella, E. coli can move into the milk, and especially if we're working with non-pasteurized milk, that's not very common, but it's becoming more common. These pathogens can move into the products that we make from milk. And then Clostridia are an issue. Clostridia from the manure will be deposited on the soil, some on the forage, and when we harvest this material for silage, Clostridia will often get incorporated into the milk. These spores sometimes are not killed by pasteurization, and we have problems with production of hard cheeses. This is an issue that is avoided in some places of Europe because they don't allow manure application on some fields that are used specifically for hard cheese production. So we do need to be concerned with those pathogens, microorganisms, and the impact that they can have on both health and on the products. Traffic effects on forage when spreading manure are also an issue, and we do have damage and, again, potential yield loss associated with traffic effects. And then high levels of manure application can result in salt burn. The fourth purpose is to control insects, diseases, and weeds through harvest management. We've looked at some literature here, and we're finding more. Cinch bug control can be accomplished by mowing Bermuda grass, Bahia grass, and tall fescue. Spill bug control, mowing Bermuda grass short to prevent thatch buildup, and alfalfa weevil control can be accomplished by harvest management, and we'll go into just a little bit of detail on that. There's the alfalfa weevil. The adult lays eggs in the spring, the adult overwinters in stubble around the field and in wood lots, fence rows, lays eggs in the spring. The larvae come out after a given number of growing degree days. So we can pretty much model, we know when those alfalfa weevil will be present, and that often matches about the time that we have early bud stage, late vegetative stage of alfalfa. So if we do have high weevil populations, we can harvest to remove those weevils. We can destroy in the range usually of 98% of the alfalfa weevil larvae by an early harvest. So this is a strategy that can be used for controlling weevil. It's and it's an important strategy because we have some parasites of alfalfa weevil that were introduced to the United States several years ago. And if we use herbicides, insecticides, I mean, to kill the weevil, we do kill some of the parasites, and we kill most of the weevil larvae and don't let those parasites then multiply and accumulate in the environment. So it is a preferred method when possible, when we don't have too much damage to allow it to let the parasites and harvest management work to control the alfalfa weevil. Potato leafhopper is another insect that in alfalfa producing areas requires attention almost every year, and until recently spraying was the only option that we had to control potato leafhopper. We now have potato leafhopper resistant varieties, and we can see yield differences between susceptible and resistant. And use of these resistant varieties will eliminate the death, the killing of non-target insects. So this provides us with a tool for dealing with this particular insect pest. Diseases. We don't have very good options, very many options for controlling diseases with harvest management. Use of resistant varieties is the best defense against diseases. Stresses, including harvest management, may enhance the impact of diseases. Sanitation of equipment can, in some cases, slow movement of some diseases, and we'll look at a couple of those in a minute, and early harvest can, in some cases, reduce incidence of some diseases. So the effect of leaf and stem blights, leaf spots, can be minimized by timely harvest to open up the canopy, allow air movement, allow direct light onto the fungi responsible for these diseases. Harvest of verticillium wilt infected fields, if these infected fields are harvested last, this is a harvest management decision. We can somewhat affect the spread of the disease by machinery. And snow mold, we'll move to grasses right now. Snow mold and perennial ryegrass and tall fescue can be reduced by autumn harvest. Weeds, any management that weakens plants will offer opportunity for weeds. Harvest to prevent weeds from going to seed is a beneficial management strategy. Some weed seeds will survive in siling. This is a concern, and these weeds may also survive the digestive tract, so there's potential to move weed seeds to other fields or other farms if we harvest after weeds have set seed. And keep in mind that not all weeds are a problem. This last purpose is to maintain and improve wildlife habitat, and it's very difficult with hay systems to maintain or improve wildlife habitat if our primary goal is to harvest high-quality forage. We can set aside areas that will allow us to improve wildlife habitat, but it's difficult to do it while we're maintaining high-quality forage production. Birds were mentioned earlier, so the big thing with birds is that that we need to have nesting cover, we need to have brood cover and winter cover, and we need to delay harvest until the eggs have hatched and until the young birds have moved into other areas. Okay. We have tools such as these flushing bars to scare birds, scare deer. They have been effective in many cases. Another strategy is to leave odd areas of grass. So we've got the hay field here and grass and on the edges of the fields. That's a place for the birds to have the habitat that they need. So recommendations, practice standard 511 is in general consistent with the literature. Each state, each situation, each livestock situation will require specific guidelines, and that, of course, is the situation. We have identified some knowledge gaps, and there's work that has demonstrated that with nitrogen fertilizer prices increasing, that there may be economic need to shorten crop rotations with alfalfa, clover, and corn. This is going to be a negative thing for soil erosion. Another question, will insect and disease resistant legumes provide more opportunities in the future? We've got the resistance of for potato leafhopper. Will that be developed for alfalfa weevil and other insects that affect forage plants? This kind of developing issue is the manure application has to be, we have to consider the pathogen transfer among cattle and the effect on milk quality. And there are forages now that will possibly allow us to harvest, have staggered maturity that are commercially available, applying or using different forages, different species of forages may provide some flexibility for harvest and wildlife. And finally, we have this new product of low lignin, genetically engineered alfalfa. This will allow us to delay harvest and will have then large impacts on our harvest management strategies. And we need to do some additional research on that to figure out the full implications. Matt, I'll turn it over to you.